for me. And heaven knows texting wouldn't be enough. Oh, Jonah, you're the roots, darling. I'm the clouds. Our love will always be from afar. I expect him to smile, but he looks so stricken that I give it to him straight. I need to get things right for myself.
I know, and I want you to, and I'd support...
I know, but I have to do it in my time, for me. I know you would never rush me, but I think I'd rush me. If we planned visits, I'd want to seem better for you. He opens his mouth to say something, but I climb into his lap before he can. He's sitting with his knees bent, and I sit exactly the same way, only facing him. It takes me a minute to situate myself, because of the sling on my arm and the broken ribs that ache throughout my side. Once I'm settled, I stare right into those brown eyes of his, and they almost liquefy my resolve. The coastal wind whips our hair, a chill rushing through me. I imagine what we must look like from a distance, two little specks interlocking, sitting on a cliff over the seas with a backdrop of ocean and stars. What I mean is, there are worse places to break someone else's heart, and your own. But finding each other was celestial, and this is how it must be. Maybe we were dying planets, Jonah, being drawn into the darkness. I hold my right palm against his cheek, and I wish I could touch him with both my hands. When we collided, we bounced each other back into orbit. And now we have to do that. We have to return to our own paths because that's what we gave each other.
Sounds lonely.
He gives me that self-deprecating smile. My heart bangs into my ribcage, screaming at me, "Traitor, traitor!" A little lonely, yes. Jonah tucks a lock of wild hair behind my ear. His smile doesn't hide his own aching chest. I can feel it.
Can we say, someday?
I lean in, touching my lips against his. He smells like him, like shampoo and oregano and everything I want to keep, even though I know I can't right now. Someday, Jonah. Someday. When I sit back, we stay there with our foreheads pressed together. Jonah Daniels. My sweet boy with his rumpled hair and khakis and heart handed me so many things that I needed. And his beautiful, boisterous family. They gave me something I've never held before in my life. The desire for that kind of love. Maybe I'll grow up and fall in love and have half a dozen kids. Or maybe I'll buy a little house with a big dining room table and a deck. And I'll have a group of friends who come over all the time to drink wine and laugh our way even through the hard times. I've always fixated on the things I want in my life. Paint palettes and sumptuous fabrics and star-flecked skies. And dancing on my tiptoes and the smell of jasmine. But I usually imagine myself alone or falling in love with all kinds of different people. These days, I've started to daydream of the permanent relationships I want to have. Friends who stay in my life forever. People who I trust to love me even if I'm wobbling, the way I trust Jonah. And if that's what I want, then I have scorched earth to till and replant. I love Ruby and Amala too much to not try. I have a Japanese maple seedling, and I have seen how beautiful a rooted life can be. But I have miles to go before I decide where to plant us. I want to tell you something, I say. I wish I could explain everything to Jonah, but bipolar disorder is an untranslatable term. I could tell him that sometimes it feels like being on a carnival ride, so fast and dizzying and fun at first. Then it goes on for too long, and you can't stop. I could tell him how I hurt friends without meaning to. I could tell him that depression made me feel like a husk, empty and lifeless. Those comparisons might help, but bipolar disorder is so complex, and it's mine. My feelings have back rooms and trap doors, and I'm still learning them. I can't quite articulate what bipolar disorder is for me exactly, but I can articulate who he is to me, and so I take a deep breath. I want you to know that I wouldn't have done anything differently this summer. Well, that's not true, obviously. I give a breathy laugh and let myself start over. That first night we went to the beach, I wore my nightgown because, why not? That's me. But the day before I crashed the Vespa, I wore that nightgown all over town without even caring that everyone could see. And, well, I wouldn't have done that. But there still would have been picnics and writing plays and making scavenger hunts. I would have loved you the same.
I know that,
he says. But he closes his eyes for a split second, relief that he can't hide from me. His hand is on my cheek, looking at me so admiringly that I almost can't believe I'll walk away from this.
It doesn't change anything for me either, Viv. You know that, right?
My own eyes blink closed. Yes, I already knew that, but I treasure the words. And thank you for the pie, Jonah, I whisper, even as the first tear rolls hot down my face. I'll never forget it.
Me neither, Viv.
God knows, and so does Jonah Daniels, that I don't just mean the pie. We know there are three little words branded inside my heart. Jonah was here. I'm bogged down in my realities. Money gone, friends I've hurt, medications I haven't taken and the ones I have and will. A way forward that will be hard to navigate. I feel a little emptied out, but not exactly hollowed. Sometimes I feel empty like a new canvas. I almost try to explain another untranslatable word, shunyata, to Jonah. The idea has Buddhist roots and several meanings, depending on context. I think emptiness is the closest word. But in English, we infer emptiness as a void, a lack. Shunyata is open with possibility, a meditative space. But Jonah's lips are warm on mine, and so I savor this kiss like the last bite. That's the thing they never tell you about love stories. Just because one ends, that doesn't mean it failed. A cherry pie isn't a failure just because you eat it all. It's perfect for what it is. And then it's gone. And exchanging the truest parts of yourself, all the things you are, with someone, what a slice of life. One I'll carry with me into every single someday. I lie down in the cool grass beside him, as planets collide above us. And we stay like this for a long time, down to every last crumb. My cheeks are wet, but oh, my heart, it is so full.
Chapter 28. Jonah. Hi, a little voice says. Hi, hi, hi. Guess what? Waffles. I peek one eye open. Leah's grinning back at me, bouncing at the edge of my bed. I was up till sunrise with Vivi two nights ago, and I've had a pounding headache since. Jonah, come on, Leah says. She pushes all her weight onto the bed, jostling me. You're the only one who's not up. Okay, okay. I sit back against my elbows. Your hair looks nice. Thanks. Leah's hands move to the ends of her braids. They're the fancy kind. I can't even fathom how to bend a hair like that. Mom did it. I trudge downstairs with Leah traipsing in front of me. Something stops me in the kitchen doorway. And it's not just the smell of hot waffle batter. Naomi is manning the waffle iron. Isaac is trying, and failing, to juggle three oranges. Becca's tongue is sticking out in concentration as she slices up strawberries. Silas is stuffing his face with the first batch of waffles, piled high with whipped cream and powdered sugar. My mom is putting water in the coffee maker. She's in her pajamas, but then so is everyone but Silas, who's wearing his work polo. My family is everywhere, busy with individual tasks and reaching over one another, but somehow doing it all together. It's such a familiar scene that part of me expects to turn the corner and see my dad. I know he won't be there, but it feels like he's in the kitchen all the same. In Naomi's determination and Silas's easy humor, and Becca's sensitivity, and Isaac's precociousness and Leah's everyday excitement, in my... well, I don't know what, but I hope something. Something good. Silas's plate clatters in the sink, and he sees me as he turns back. Hey, Sleeping Beauty. I grunt. He swats me with his apron as he passes by. Silas, my mom calls over her shoulder, before you go off to work, leave the dorm packing list out, okay? The one from the website? I'll see where we are with it. Okay, he calls, hurrying up the stairs. Jonah, Becca says, what toppings do you want? Strawberries and chocolate syrup. I sit down on a stool. Leah grabs the whipped cream canister and sprays it into her mouth. My dad used to do that with us. We'd all shriek with joy. It was too good to be true, eating straight whipped cream. Hey, my mom says to Leah, no spoiling your breakfast with pure sugar, Missy. Sorry, Leah says, with her cheeks puffed out. She's clearly not sorry. My mom shakes her head, but in an OU kids kind of way.
Morning, pal. You want some coffee?
Yeah, thanks. She pulls another mug from the cabinet. Naomi slides a waffle to Becca, who tops it with whipped cream and strawberries and passes it to Leah. They're an efficient assembly line, like the kitchen staff at the restaurant. My dad would be proud.
Isaac, my mom says, put the fruit down and eat your food.
One of the mid-air oranges hits the counter with a thud. When the coffee is ready, my mom fills up the mugs and hands one to me. She sits down at the kitchen table with a plate of waffles. Becca and Isaac sit on either side of her. I stay seated at the island between Naomi and Leah. I have to find a way to tell Leah that Vivi's leaving today, and probably won't stop in to say goodbye. I wait until she takes a bite, so she'll have a second to process it. I use a calm, quiet voice. I'm gonna see Vivi today, before she has to move. Do you want to draw her a picture or something? I texted Vivi yesterday to see if she needed help packing. She said no. I was so disappointed that I almost went over anyway. But then she told me to meet her at the park today. Of course. It'd be a dramatic farewell, with a meeting time in anticipation. I'm half dreading it. I'm half desperate for it. Leah shakes her head.
I already gave her one. She came over yesterday morning and we played.
Vivi came over while I was at the restaurant?
Yeah, we played ponies and stuff.
I glance at Naomi for more information. Were you here when she came over? Naomi nods, not looking up from her waffle. We all were. In a quieter voice, I ask her, why did she come over? To say goodbye? She chews a bite and swallows. She came to pick up something of Sylvia's. She said, I think she actually said see ya as she was leaving. She was just, I don't know, being Vivi. I turn it over in my mind. I'd understand if she wanted to slip out with the shadows, after all she's been through. Instead, she came over here, when she specifically knew I wouldn't be home, to spend one more happy day with my brothers and sisters. My throat aches. I don't think it's the too big bite of waffle I just tried to swallow. Leah swings her feet below the island ledge.
I wish Vivi didn't have to leave. It makes me sad when I think about it.
Yeah, I say. Me too. Naomi shakes her head. There's something ironic in her smile. You know what? Me too. I shower and shave and try to make my hair look presentable. There's a sailor's knot in my throat. I'm supposed to walk to the park toward Vivi, and that part's fine. It's the walking away from her that I can't imagine. On my way, I think about how Isaac is obsessed with archaeology. I get it. The dinosaur bones and ancient artifacts and excavated graves. It's cool. It comes to mind because Vivi climbed into my life with her fossil brush, and she swept away the dust. She rediscovered me under all that rubble, and that means I'll always be a little bit hers. How am I supposed to say goodbye to someone like that? I'm still yards away from the park. When I realize she's not here, you can feel a girl like Vivi. She shifts the ground under your feet, and I don't sense them, the tremors beneath me. There's a note pinned to the oldest tree in the park, a tree scratched with her name. So, this is how it will be. She gets to say goodbye. I don't. I should have known.
Dear Jonah, I lied. Goodbye is my least favorite word in my entire vocabulary. Much worse than even squish or protuberance. And I just can't say it to your handsome face. Give your family kisses from me, will you? I think I fell for all seven of you a little more every day. But mostly you, Jonah. Mostly madly, beautifully you. Don't tell Isaac, okay? He'd be crushed. Maybe in my next life I'll be a wave in the ocean, and you'll be a mountain, and we'll spend years and years brushing up against each other. You'll shift so painfully slowly, and some days I'll crash right into you, and other days I'll approach gently, licking your sides. That sounds like us, doesn't it? Or maybe we'll meet in this same life. Maybe I'll be working as a costume designer for a movie that's filming in a city where you're the chef of your own restaurant. And our eyes will lock in the middle of a busy street, and I'll whisper, "It's you." Maybe I'll sneak into your little bungalow house while your fiancé is out of town on business, and we'll make love like we have in past lives and in this life. That doesn't sound like something you'd do, but a girl can dream. Either way, Jonah, I simply cannot wait to see who you become. Until someday, Vivi. P.S. I left something for you on the restaurant patio. Took me all night. I call it How We Say Goodbye.
I blink, taking in the sharp lines of her name and, next to it, a red lip print, kissing me goodbye. Of course she'd make a dramatic exit. Even without being here. We can't keep each other. I know that, but I wanted to see her one last time. I wanted to say thank you. I wanted to make one last attempt at memorizing her. I hurry to the restaurant, clutching her goodbye note. What would she leave for me? What would take her all night? I don't even bother going into the restaurant itself. I cut through the side alleyway to the patio. And I stopped dead in my tracks. I expected that she left something for me on the picnic table, but it's not that. On the wall opposite the patio, she painted me a mural. My heart beats like tripping feet. I try to imagine her, balanced on a ladder all night with a sling on her arm. The patio lights are on. I never leave them on, so she must have painted by the light of them. She did this for me. How We Say Goodbye. The Verona Cove lighthouse is in the right foreground. Beyond it, there are ships in the harbor. Seven of them, all with white sails. I'm not sure how she gave a flat wall so much movement, like each sail is flickering. I can almost hear them beating against the wind. There's one bigger boat in the distance, sailing toward the upper left corner. The horizon, golden blue, looks inviting and limitless. The lone boat sails, puff out in pride, a pioneer to the unknown. The seven boats in harbor seem to be waving goodbye, cheering bon voyage. Vivi crammed all her vivification into this one painting, right down to the nautical flags on the biggest ship. I learned the letters associated with nautical flags when I was a kid. The first is a D. The second, blue and white, an A. Wait, my eyes skip down the mast. They spell out Daniels. It strikes me like whiplash. There are also seven little ships in harbor, one for every living member of my family. This is not a painting about Vivi and me saying goodbye. The large boat sailing away for new adventures, it's my dad. My God. She painted a family portrait. She painted us as sailboats. I see it now. How could I have missed it at first? My eyes fill hot with tears, because apparently casual crying is just something that I do now. My chest caves in with missing my dad. I touch the horizon line, skimming my hand over the still tacky paint. Gold melts into every color of blue where the ocean dips off into nothing. Do you believe in heaven? Vivi asked me once, and I told her the truth, that I want to. In one painting, she gave me something I've needed for months now. Happiness, even in uncertainty. What's past that horizon line? And how many of us get our someday's? I don't know. But just because I don't know doesn't mean it can't be great. It takes me a second to notice the small letters painted in the bottom corner. But I knew they'd be there, like I know they'll be all over the world someday. Vivi was here.
This has been an Audible Studios production of When We Collided, written by Emery Lord, performed by Elizabeth Evans and Raviv Ullman. Producer, Mike Charzik. Copyright 2016, Emery Lord. Production copyright 2016 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.